Welcome to the Changing State of Talent Acquisition, where your hosts, Graham Thornton and Martin Pred, share their unfiltered takes on what's happening in the world of talent acquisition today. Each week brings new guests who share their stories on the tools, trends, and technologies currently impacting the changing state of talent acquisition. Have feedback or want to join the show? Head on over to changestate.io. And now, on to this week's episode.
All right, and we are excited to be back with another episode of the Changing State of Talent Acquisition podcast. Our next guest is an industry veteran. Super excited to have Adam join us. Adam, we'll let you introduce yourself, but we're joined by Adam Godson, currently President and Chief Product Officer at Paradox. Adam, why don't you briefly share your journey into the world of HR and talent acquisition and what keeps you busy today?
Hey, Graham. Hey, Marty. Great to be with you. Thanks for the invite to be on the show. Yeah, Adam Godson, the LED product at Paradox, briefly stated my job is to figure out what we should do and then make that happen. So I run product and engineering, and my job is to help us get stuff done. I've been in talent acquisition and talent acquisition technology my entire career as a 21-year-old walking out of the halls of a college campus into recruiting. Since day one, I've never wanted to do anything else. It's gotten more technical, more nuanced over the years, but I love to learn and have found my way to Paradox, where my role is to create new technologies that help improve talent acquisition and the things that we do. So it's the only job I wanted, and I love doing it every day.
That's fantastic. I think it's probably pretty rare to hear people that are coming right out of school and going right into recruiting and staying there. You know, you've had some pretty interesting journeys to get into recruiting. So I think that means you've seen a lot of change over the last couple decades. Would you a safe assumption?
Yeah, for sure. And there are times where I regale my team with the old story, and I sound like the oldest person alive about how I had literal folders, like physical manila folders, that were the early talent communities, I think, on a desk. But I've been doing it a long time. You know, the technology thing has always been the part. When you're early career in talent acquisition, you get, for me anyway, I get assigned all the technology things. So to help implement the applicant tracking system, help us be more forward thinking on technology, help us run, you know, early programmatic advertising. And so just getting the cutting edge and all those things helped me get through there. Now that I get to create it as well.
That's good. Yeah, we've gotten away from the days of faxing and resumes. So I think, you know, making some progress, this is good. Well, that actually, you know, I think that's a good place to start, right? So, you know, we'll talk about the tech aspect. You know, people apply to jobs, you know, a couple decades ago, my job getting out of school, I literally faxed in resumes, right? And, right. You know, I think in the last couple of years, we've seen, you know, sort of the process of applying for jobs has changed quite a bit. You know, there's a lot more easy ways to apply for jobs. I think Paradox contributes to that solution for sure. And now, you know, we see a lot of times where, you know, job seekers are applying to jobs, you know, sometimes without ever leaving a job board. So right. I think that's great for efficiency for candidates and employers. But, you know, as Marty and I have chatted through, you know, definitely a bit of a challenge for communicating an employer brand. You know, no one's landing, you know, and is as engaged of a process to really learn about a company. So, you know, I'm curious, like, you know, maybe a good starting point is change and apply frameworks. How are companies communicating, you know, their EVP in a way that candidates can understand when they may never even visit a career site?
Yeah, it's a super interesting challenge that I think not enough people are talking about, where we see a lot of job boards, indeed being the largest, going to their quick apply frameworks, where they're taking in questions from applicant tracking systems, and then the candidate can apply from the job board without ever leaving, going to the career site like you might have typically done. And in many ways, that's really great for the candidate. They don't have to find the tiny text that says create an account and then sign up for a profile on 300 applicant tracking systems. And so that is good. But to your point, what they lose is they never actually go to that website. So they don't have a chance to see the video that the employer brand team made. And they don't have a chance to understand what it's like to work there, what other types of jobs they have that are available. And so I think in some ways the danger is that we simply move the bottleneck one step down the funnel, where instead of the candidate dropping off because they can't find the tiny link that says create an account, they apply to something they really don't understand. And they apply to something that isn't a good fit for them. We don't have a chance to have that polarizing employer brand that says you belong here or you don't belong here, and let them make that choice. And so I think the net effect of that for us as professionals is how do we take that the emotion and the parts that did exist on that career site that we're trying to convey and make them happen throughout the process. So can we send a message that says, here's what you need to know before your interview, right before the interview? Can you send the right message after the interview and before the offer? All the different sort of moments that matter in the process, and make that more longitudinal throughout the process instead of the transactional at the beginning, now that that's potentially lost.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm interested in this idea of the apply becoming more transactional, because I think in part we've created this problem as recruiters, TA professionals, by frankly training candidates to almost not expect a reply when they apply for a job. I mean, we had one of our clients that remained nameless recently, and we did a survey for them and asked what percentage of the recent candidates had actually heard any response at all. And I think there was, you'll correct me, Graham, if I'm wrong, but it was like 65% or something didn't receive a response at all, which was kind of stunning to their team, because certainly we knew there was improvement to do, but we didn't think it was going to be that high. So it does seem to create an environment where, I like what you said, kind of moving it, the bottleneck, one step down the funnel, because the action of doing a quick apply almost is less meaningful. You know, as you're saying, people Absolutely. Are just clicking it 10, 20 times in a row because they're frankly not expecting to hear back from someone. And then if they do hear back from someone, then they'll actually go through the process of learning about the company. I'm just curious if you've seen this make this the job of recruiters harder, because in a way, as you pointed out, the employer brand functions as a filter, as of something that could be polarizing. Yeah. And is quick apply just giving recruiters this huge swath of candidates, maybe 10% of whom actually want to work there and would be qualified?
Well, I've seen it before, and we're starting to see some of the same noises again. There was a period of time, maybe 2016-ish, where some of the major job boards put in features after you applied that would say things like, apply me to 50 similar jobs. And it would just spam out applications to 50 jobs that they've never seen. And what ends up happening for those to recruiters is they call those candidates and they say, well, I don't remember applying for this job. What is it? And so it just manifests itself, you know, downstream in things like no-shows and candidates and really wasted effort on behalf of the recruiter. And so those features were eventually removed because they were counterproductive. And so I think we're starting to see some of that happen again, where companies that aren't prepared with automation are simply seeing the filling of inboxes and filling of applicant tracking systems, but managers still not reacting and getting the processes done. So the quick apply stuff isn't having the net benefit that they had hoped it would without automation downstream.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm just wondering about the incentives too for a job board. You know, if they're getting paid based on clicks or applications, sure, it's really great for them if they make it super easy to apply. And you can understand why a job board would want to say, hey, do you want to apply to 50 other jobs right now? I don't know if there's an easy solution to that problem. I guess if the feedback loop comes back to them and clients are saying, yeah, we got 50 applications, but they're all garbage, maybe that's the key to seeing some change over time.
Yeah, well, the job board incentive has led to the quick apply pieces and the newer version to that in the first place, where, you know, it is sort of a silly business model for someone in a job board to pay a whole bunch of money for traffic and then immediately send it off of the website to a bunch of career sites and then, you know, have it not come back. And so the idea is right to keep the traffic on their site, but they have to be sure that those applies are being actioned on so that they ultimately result in hires. And I think that's where you see some of the movement towards paper applicant, paper hire, on the job board side as well, just because they know that they have to connect more to value.
Yeah, I think that's it. And like, you know, there's a fine line between applying to 50 jobs with a click and, you know, applying to 50 jobs where, you know, you're a match, right? And, you know, I think some of this stuff works in high volume to a point, but boy, like you're really putting a lot of trust in the job board, you know, even in the quick apply scenarios where, boy, if you're not matching the right person with the right job, you know, it is a relevancy problem. And, you know, this is, Marty's heard me talk about this at length. Like, this is one of my gripes with, you know, job boards as a whole, right? Like, you know, the rules are always changing, right? And I think that's a frustration point in our industry. And I feel like we're dealing with legal teams when we're, you know, negotiating on how to advertise with job boards at times. And it's, hey, like, we'd like to advertise in, you know, one state only. And like, okay, so we say we're going to advertise in one state. They're like, yeah, but you said it was remote. It's like, yeah, but it says remote in Florida. They're like, well, but you also just said remote. It's like, well, you know, but then when you asked us where we're going to advertise, we said Florida. They're like, well, yeah, but you also said remote. So we're going to show it to anyone. And I, you know, it's kind of like, well, one of the points of the inputs, like, I get it. Like, I get it to a point, right? We want volume, and that is what, you know, in high volume recruiting, we're looking for, but we want relevant volume too. And we also want relevant volume that, you know, can get into a process so technology can take over. And so I think that, you know, I still think we have such a big problem of, you know, top of funnel relevancy.
For sure.
And so I'm super excited, you know, the further down funnel we can get, you know, with our clients and with our publishers and their job boards, you know, the better. And so what I mean by that is, I think most job boards do want to know if they're delivering quality traffic, do want to know if they're delivering relevant traffic. You know, the challenge is if you are, you know, throwing something, you know, if you're throwing ads into an ATS or sorry, applicants into an ATS instead of keeping them in an in-house repository, it just becomes difficult for job boards to get that visibility.
For sure. But that's everything, right? Like, to your point is you know, we're trying to create an efficient marketplace between people and jobs. And everything that doesn't result in a hire is ultimately waste. And so how do we work on relevancy and signal throughout the process to help make that as efficient as possible? Like, that makes it good for everyone.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into that just a little bit more. Not the efficiency piece. I know Marty will be mad if we move on without talking more about this, you know, employer brand piece. So, like, you know, all right, we've kind of unpacked job boards today, advertising today, what that looks like. So what are some of the more meaningful ways to really incorporate employer brand content, like at the point of application or in that process? Like, what are you finding, you know, has a real impact on, you know, throughput, conversion metrics? Let's unpack that a bit.
Yeah, so I think a few things. So the thing that matters a lot is also medium. How do you connect with people? So the most effective medium that exists right now is messaging. So SMS or WhatsApp, depending on where on the globe you are. And so getting people messages through that medium that are actually consumed and that are short and appropriate for that medium as well is the best delivery mechanism. And then it's all about how do we get the right message at the right time? And that's where using the right systems to understand what's happening for that candidate makes sense. And so after they apply, the value prop, right? Like what we see is specifically on the sort of high volume hourly job seeker side is that people tend to consume content when they get asked back for an interview. And so they tend to, partially because people treat them pretty poorly, as you noted earlier, they actually start to get engaged once they get that interview scheduled. And so, great, you scheduled for the interview. Now's the time to tell you why you should come to this company, what this is about, and what, you know, how we have that, the value proposition. And then from there, it's about the logistics. So people complain some about ghosting. I tell our companies, like, you can solve ghosting with three steps. Schedule the interview for really soon, like tomorrow. Send them a reminder of when the interview is, and then let them reschedule easily if they need to reschedule. So it's not that, like, human beings have gotten worse in the last 5 years. They've gotten busy, but very simply, if you do those three pieces of communication, then people will show up to your interview. So, like, SMS and then the right content at the right time.
Yeah, shockingly, if you communicate with people in a timely fashion, you have a better result. I mean, sometimes it's just funny that, I mean, I can be a bit jaded, as anyone knows who's listened to the podcast, but with the industry as it is, it's like, we have treated people pretty poorly. Sometimes the easy answer is the obvious answer. Like, let's just actually treat people well and get back to them quickly. I mean, one of the other things you said that's interesting to me is the fact that one of the most effective mediums is texting or SMS or WhatsApp. I think that's interesting because, you know, we do a lot of work with companies helping them define their EVPs. And those projects can be kind of sprawling affairs where you develop very extensive messaging frameworks, and there's pillars, and you know, everyone has their different language for talking about it. But in essence, what you're really trying to do with an EVP is answer the simple question, why should someone work at this company? What's the unique value proposition? And we always encourage our clients to try to make that as simple and concise of an answer as possible. And I think what you're saying here about the importance of SMS is the reality is, even if we have a beautiful career site that has all that great messaging laid out in great detail, we may not have that much share of an applicant's attention. In fact, maybe we're only getting an opportunity to send a 2 or 3 line text message to them. And if we don't make the right impression with that initial communication, it could be game over. So I think there's an interesting way in which the technology is actually encouraging us to be more concise as we think about developing EVPs. Not really a question. I just think that I think that's actually pushing the EVP conversation in a helpful direction.
Well, I think you're right. And I think if you combine the last two topics, especially in a volume atmosphere, people coming, you know, where they get 70% of their candidates from job boards or from text to apply, the majority of your applicants will never visit a career site. So they'll never see that message unless you send it to them. And so sending a video, sending the right 2-line message is just as important as the fanciest framework you can come up with.
Yeah. So I think it's a good segue here. So, all right, we have made it easier to get candidates at scale. You know, it's arguably a little bit more of a noisy conversation sometimes with candidates. You know, I think people are getting a lot more text. I get, you know, my Netflix account gets shut down every 3 hours if you read my text message string. You know, so it's very easy to get people, connect people via text. You know, I'm curious, like, you know, if that is the new medium or a preferred medium, like, you know, what are some ways that, you know, employers can stand out, right? In an environment where, you know, it is arguably increasingly more transactional, you know, increasingly more, you know, automated to a point. So, you know, so what do employers do to stand out in that scenario?
Yeah, I think it really is all about timing and just having your systems connected so that you can send the person the right message at the right time. And I'm sorry, I keep saying things that are probably incredibly simple, but it really is about that. We see a lot of employers wanting to do things like large scale text campaigns to a list they find. And so there's a lot of compliance you've got to worry about too around SMS that can be pretty hairy. We've got a whole team that works on SMS compliance at Paradox, for example. And so, and most of those messages are actually net negative. Like, no one really likes text spam. We find it pretty offensive as a society. And so just more text definitely isn't the answer, but targeted text is. So when is a person receptive to that message? You know, think and you get that by knowing where they are in the process. You know, they haven't heard from anyone in 3 days. Great, send them a check-in text. The interview just happened. Send them a text 30 minutes after. So it's really all about timing and the right messages for those times.
Yeah. All right. This is great. Because this is where I wanted to take this conversation, right? So, all right. We've talked about like brand. We talk about, you know, messaging as a whole. So in sort of our season 3 launch, we talked a bit about like how I was a little upset that, you know, we weren't seeing more predictions for, you know, TA trends. You know, everyone puts their list out in 2023 around automation of activities. So, you know, I think what you just mentioned, if I'm hearing you correctly, is, hey, like, we need to be smart about how we're using triggers to, you know, automate pieces in the process to communicate. So I think automation recruiting is a pretty hot topic. As you just pointed, you can't just buy a list and blast, you know, 25,000 people to text, but companies are trying to hire at scale. So in your experience, like, where is automation most appropriate in the candidate journey? I think you mentioned a couple, you know, connection points where, you know, it's been helpful to engage candidates throughout that journey. So like, where are you seeing, or where is Paradox, you know, seeing based on your data, you know, some of the more appropriate places to engage in automation throughout the candidate journey?
Yeah, I think the first caveat is that it depends a lot on the role. And so if you're looking for a role in retail or restaurant, the number one variable, unsurprisingly, is speed. So whatever you can help me get to as fast as possible from the moment I'm interested to the moment I'm working there is good automation. And just speed trumps everything else. When you think more about professional roles, it's a lot more nuanced. And so in that world, it tends to be, let's automate the things that are transactional and not adding value. And let's actually personalize places where more intentionally where we can do that. And so, and that's actually like the literal paradox from which we're named, is that by using software, you can make the process more human, and letting people spend more time with people, not software. And so like an area that jumps out there is always interview scheduling. No one achieved self-actualization through scheduling an interview with someone else. And so as we can smooth out that part of the transaction, have it done quickly and easily via SMS and calendar connections, automations, the data we see that makes everyone happy, managers to candidates all the way through.
Yeah. You know, I think I saw a LinkedIn post this week where some large organization has something like 250 HR coordinators and their sole job is to schedule interviews for hiring managers. And I mean, I'm good enough at math to know that that's a lot of headcount cost for something that, you know, to your point, can probably be automated for sure. So scheduling interviews, great example. What about areas where it is not appropriate? So like, you know, we're hearing a lot more about ChatGPT. We won't go down that path too, you know, maybe we will. Maybe we'll go down that path, but you know, like people are looking at more ways to take the human out of the process. I'm curious, what's your hypothesis for where are humans not going to be replaced, or what, you know, where can the human interaction not easily be replaced?
Yeah, I think in the convincing them to join stage, and that can be at the actual like at an interview, you know, or can be earlier in the process around sort of convincing them to continue in the process. But anytime we're convincing someone, I think is the part where that to me is part of the real recruiting that happens in recruiting, right? Like it's not just about screening someone out or it's about recruiting them, convincing them to join. That is something that's authentically human and needs to be done by people. There's no GPT that's going to be consistently good enough to make that authentic. And I think the other part of that automation where that matters is that someone took the time and cared, and actually it was worth their time to have a conversation with you. So it's not always about the smoothness of the conversation. It's about someone, a recruiter, a manager, someone took time out of their day to spend it with you to help, you know, you understand the value of joining the company. So I think those are some things that are really important to remain human.
Yeah, I like that idea. And I think it's a kind of, it's not the most obvious point, but, you know, it's easy to get excited about technology and automation, and we could automate a lot of things. I was watching an interview with Sam Altman, who's the, I think, co-founder of OpenAI, and he was saying, you know, one of the jobs that's most likely to be replaced in the near future, because everyone's panicked about it, is maybe customer service roles. And really, a customer service role is not that different than a recruiter in terms of high volume recruiting in any ways, where you're just filling a lot of seats at once. And you could probably imagine a future where an AI could actually have those conversations if you had a large enough training data set for it. But I think the next question is that actually what we want to do? Because as employers, we're thinking about our employer brand, our value proposition. We're trying to make employees feel like we do value them. And even if something could be done by an AI and maybe even done better, I think you're sending a certain message when we're saying as an organization, this is not important enough to have a human being actually interact with you on. It sends a subtle message, I think, to candidates about whether they are valued or not. I think that's kind of what you were hinting at there. Maybe if I understood you correctly.
Yeah, well, I was actually having a good debate the other day with a friend about the idea of having like an avatar and voice-based interview, right? So like we could, and we experiment with everything, I'll say that, produce like a video that's like an avatar and like have the person interview you face-to-face. And people tend to pick at like the small like things that make it not good enough, right? Like, oh, the voice is a little off here, like it blinks too much or whatever it is. And so but what we got to was like, what if it was perfect? What if I had this perfect lifelike person that's automated doing a interview with you? How would that feel to you? And I think where we landed was like it would be efficient, but we would still feel like no one took the time. And the emotional part that someone took the time and cared was just as important as whether the voice track, you know, was human. So I think that point is one that is going to be debated for some time.
So it's going to be debated for some time. Do you see a future where, you know, in your example, you know, like the hiring process or the interviews are handled by no humans, you know, in that avatar example. If you're betting on AM, is that something that like we should expect in 15 years?
Well, sure. I mean, honestly, companies do it today, where we see quite a few volume-based companies that have cut out the interview entirely. And so you go and you answer a few questions, you do your preliminary background check, and you get a conditional offer in 5 minutes. And so that happens. I think the question is about how far that goes sort of up the difficulty chain, where it's happening now for service level roles that have relatively few qualifications. So how far does that go up? And I think it'll depend a lot on how those things are accepted by society.
Yeah, you remember, you ever get those Google Glass glasses back in the day when we were in
I never had them. I was never a glass hole, but I remember for sure.
I remember, but everyone could guess where it was. But at my last company, that was a big thing. Like, oh, we're going to get Google, glasses. And like, that was some trip award. And I don't know where they went. I didn't get them. But now I've got the Oculus. I got to give my dad my Oculus because he's going to learn how to apparently park a sailboat wearing his Oculus. I don't know if that's, I guess that's probably safer than, having him out there on a, sailboat by himself trying to park it. But, whatever. I don't think we're going to have people wearing Oculus. I think, that we're going to have a real challenge, if we're all going to have to wear Oculus goggles to, try and go through interviews. But,
but it's probably safer him doing that, the private parking than all the real boats and bumping everything around. So we'll see.
Yeah, fair. Well, yeah, I mean, we talk about avatars. I mean, we're a remote first company. Like everyone knows that. And like, we have our virtual events in our virtual space. Right. We have all of our client meetings in our virtual space. And, that feels enough for me for now, for where I want AI to sit or where I want my avatars to sit in the interview process. It does make it feel like we're at least somewhat in an office though, pretty consistently. And, I tell you, that's been a real, big win for us from a culture standpoint, for sure.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of those things are kind of yet to be decided. Some of it's going to come down to how it feels, right? Where, you mentioned Google Glass earlier, like that failed on sort of societal adoption and how people felt about it rather than the technology itself. So a lot of that's yet to be written and is going to kind of twist and turn in unpredictable ways.
Yeah. Well, let's actually dive into this ChatGPT a little bit before we wrap, because I do think, everything in the news these days, especially related to recruiting, also privacy, is related to ChatGPT just in general. So, where do you expect, ChatGPT general AI to, disrupt TA, in the future? So, do you see this playing a role more in, recruiter outreach? Help us understand where you're kind of seeing this new urgency around ChatGPT being implemented into, HR tech.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what the next 6 to 12 months hold for this. And there's going to be an absolute blast that has been already around folks getting to like the first milestones, right? And then we'll slow down for a little bit as folks look to figure out the legal frameworks and all the sort of the second level things. And then I do think it changes the way that recruiting looks long term. I really do. And we're a conversational AI company. We've been using GPT and other large language models for some time for a variety of tasks. Because if you boil down recruiting to its essence, and I've spent lots of nights staring at the ceiling thinking about this, it's really about three things. It's about decisions. So you got to decide on the resume, decide after the interview. It's about conversations, and there's lots of them you can map in the process. And then it's a bunch of boring stuff. It's about the offer letters and all the administrative work that happens. And most things should fall into those categories. And I think GPT fundamentally changes the second one. So all the different conversations that are had from recruiters to managers, from recruiters to candidates, from managers to candidates, all those conversations from the intake and the labor market analysis, all through the status updates, through the interviews, through the check-ins, all those things can change now and have lots of different applications throughout the process. So I think it will present new problems about authenticity and getting to people and experience and other pieces. But there's no doubt a lot of efficiency is unleashed, especially in that second category.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how receptive people are. I mean, we can talk in a recruiting context. You could talk in a customer service context. It's really the same fundamental problem. I mean, I had an experience recently with Delta where I needed some support, and clearly I was handed off to their quote unquote AI chatbot. And I got to be honest, my initial feeling was one of dread. It's like, I know exactly what's going to happen here. I'm going to type a question. They're going to give me four answer prompts that don't quite explain what I need. And then I'm going to have to figure out how I trick it into letting me talk to an actual person. and I don't know. I guess the exciting thing about ChatGPT is that I think it's, and you'll know better than I, but it seems like it's a huge leap forward in terms of improving the experience that customers or candidates are having with these chatbots. I don't think it's safe to say the Delta AI chatbot would not pass the Turing test, but you can imagine a future where we do actually have an AI that could, you might actually not know if we didn't tell you that it wasn't an actual person on the other end. And I think once we get to that point where the chatbots can deliver real value for the customer or the candidate, rather than just delivering value for the employer or the business, I think people will be a lot more receptive to it.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, I mean, the quality of conversation matters significantly, and being able to get work done matters a lot. And I think that's where, you know, for us, it's been a great step forward, because the application layer matters a lot on that too. So of course you've got to be able to have conversations, but then you've got to be able to connect into the applicant tracking system to get the answer, and to the calendar to find the times, and all the other things that you have to do to sort of do this orchestration, as well as then that conversation layer. But to your point, it's going to feel so much better to the candidate because those conversations can act with nuance and inference that have previously been lacking.
Yeah, you know, one other, you know, maybe unintentional, I'll call it a benefit, you know, but like, you know, there's so much more public awareness around ChatGPT, right? And I think, you know, if we had actually looked behind the curtain of a lot of software, a lot of tools over the last couple of years, we probably would have found people were using ChatGPT, but it just wasn't a household name, too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the story is that, you know, GPT-3, the model it's built on, has been out for almost 2 years. And so we've used that for a variety of tasks that are interesting and can be helpful for us. But what changed was the interface. And what made it have this sort of zeitgeist moment was people could chat. and for us, like, it's sort of that, like, you know, aha, we've been saying this the whole time, like, conversational is the new UI of the future, whether that's in voice or chat or other pieces. But it was basically 2-year-old technology that, when you put a conversational front end on it, went to 1 million users in 5 days. And I think that just caught the imagination of what the future could be for general things, and now for recruiting too.
Yeah. I see a lot of graphs coming through about, like, how much productivity is lost just by people spending too much time playing with ChatGPT. So, I'd say, like, you know, thankfully for us, I mean, like, I think it was probably over the holiday season. So, like, oh, it was a good week or two. And, like, yeah, I had some times over the holidays to play around with. I'm like, it's nothing I need to, like, for what we do, nothing we need to build into our products today, but it's been fun. So, yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, hey, Adam, I think this is probably a good place to put a pin in it. I think it's been a great conversation. You know, I'll ask the easiest question, I think, and that's, where can people find you, find out more about Paradox online?
For sure. LinkedIn's a great spot. Twitter as well, at Adam Godson, as well as at paradox.ai. So happy to reach out if we can be of help in any way.
Awesome. Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah. Thanks, Graham. Thanks, Marty. Appreciate the conversation.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. As always, head on over to changestate.io or shoot us a note on all the social media. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll check you guys next week.